Chapter 51. Any such agitation as this before? You stab me with your words, apostrophe continued the Stancy. The experience I have had with you is without parallel, Paula. It seems like a distracting dream. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I won't be hurried by anybody. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that may mean anything, apostrophe, he said, with a perplexed, passionate air. Well, mine is a fallen family, and we must abide caprices. Would to heaven it were extinguished. Apostrophe, what was extinguished? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she murmured. The Distancies. Here am I, a homeless wanderer, living on my pay. In the next room lies she, my sister, a poor little fragile feverish invalid with no social position and hardly a friend. We two represent the Distancy line, and I wish we were behind the iron door of our old vault at Sleeping Green. It can be seen by looking at us, and our circumstances, that we cry for the earth and oblivion. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Captain Distancy, it is not like that, I assure you, apostrophe sympathized Paula with damp eyelashes. I love Charlotte too dearly for you to talk like that, indeed. I don't want to marry you exactly. And yet I cannot bring myself to say I permanently reject you, because I remember you are Charlotte's brother, and do not wish to be the cause of any morbid feelings in you which would ruin your future prospects. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear life, what is it you doubt in me? Your earnestness not to do me harm makes it all the harder for me to think of never being more than a friend. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, I have not positively refused. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she exclaimed, in mixed tones of pity and distress. Let me think it over a little while. It is not generous to urge so strongly, before I can collect my thoughts, and at this midnight time. Apostrophe, apostrophe, darling, forgive it. There, I'll say no more. Apostrophe, he then offered to sit up in her place for the remainder of the night. But Paula declined, assuring him that she meant to stay only another half hour, after which nobody would be necessary. He had already crossed the landing, to ascend to his room, when she stepped after him, and asked if he had received his telegram. No, apostrophe said Distancy. Nor have I heard of one. Apostrophe, Paula explained, that it was put in his room, that he might see it the moment he came in. It matters very little, apostrophe he replied, since I shall see it now. Good night, dearest. Good night. Apostrophe he added tenderly. She gravely shook her head. It is not for you to express yourself like that, apostrophe she answered. Good night, Captain Distancy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he went up the stairs to the second floor, and Paula returned to the sitting room. Having left a light burning, Distancy proceeded to look for the telegram, and found it on the carpet, where it had been swept from the table. When he had opened the sheet, a sudden solemnity overspread his face. He sat down, rested his elbow on the table, and his forehead on his hands. Captain Distancy did not remain thus long. Rising, he went softly downstairs. The gray morning had by this time crept into the hotel, rendering a light no longer necessary. The old clock on the landing was within a few minutes of four, and the birds were hopping up and down their cages, and wetting their bills. He tapped at the sitting room, and she came instantly. But I told you it was not necessary, apostrophe she began. Yes, but the telegram, apostrophe he said hurriedly. I wanted to let you know first that it is very serious. Paula, my father is dead. He died suddenly yesterday, and I must go at once. Dot dot about Charlotte, and how to let her know, apostrophe, she must not be told yet, apostrophe said Paula. Dot 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 Sir William dead. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you think we had better not tell her just yet? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Distancy anxiously. That's what I want to consult you about, if you don't mind my intruding. Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly I don't, apostrophe she said. They continued the discussion for some time, and it was decided that Charlotte should not be informed of what had happened till the doctor had been consulted, Paula promising to account for her brother's departure. Destancy then prepared to leave for England by the first morning train, and roused the night porter, which functionary, having packed off Abner Power, was discovered asleep on the sofa of the landlord's parlor. At 5:30, Paula, who in the interim had been pensively sitting with her hand to her chin, quite forgetting that as he had meant to go to bed, heard wheels without, and looked from the window. A fly had been brought round, and one of the hotel servants was in the act of putting up a portmanteau with the Stancy's initials upon it. A minute afterwards the captain came to her door. "I thought you had not gone to bed, after all. I was anxious to see you off," said she, "since neither of the others is awake, and you wished me not to rouse them. Quite right, you are very good," and lowering his voice. "Paula, it is a sad and solemn time with me. Will you grant me one word, not on our last sad subject, but on the previous one, before I part with you to go and bury my father?" "Certainly," she said, in gentle accents. "Then have you thought over my position? Will you at last have pity upon my loneliness by becoming my wife?" Paula sighed deeply, and said, "Yes." "Your hand upon it." She gave him her hand. He held it a few moments, then raised it to his lips, and was gone. When Mrs. Goodman rose, she was informed of Sir William's death, and of his son's departure. "Then the captain is now Sir William Destancy," she exclaimed. "Really, Paula, since you would be Lady Destancy by marrying him, I almost think well, what are you writing there?" "Only entering in my diary that I accepted him this morning for pity's sake, in spite of Uncle Abner. They'll say it was for the title, but knowing it was not, I don't care." On the evening of the fourth day after the parting between Paula and Destancy at Amiens, when it was quite dark in the Markton Highway, except in so far as the shades were broken by the faint lights from the adjacent town, a young man knocked softly at the door of Myrtle Villa and asked if Captain Destancy had arrived from abroad. He was answered in the affirmative, and in a few moments the captain himself came from an adjoining room. Seeing that his visitor was there, from whom, as will be remembered, he had parted at Karlsruhe in no very satisfied mood, Destancy did not ask him into the house, but putting on his hat, went out with the youth into the public road. Here they conversed as they walked up and down, there beginning by alluding to the death of Sir William, the suddenness of which he feared would delay Captain Destancy's overtures for the hand of Miss Power. "No," said Destancy moodily. "On the contrary, it has precipitated matters. As he has accepted you, Captain? We are engaged to be married. Well done. I congratulate you." The speaker was about to proceed to further triumphant notes on the intelligence, when casting his eye upon the upper windows of the neighboring villa, he appeared to reflect on what was within them, and checking himself, "When is the funeral to be?" "Tomorrow," Destancy replied. "It would be advisable for you not to come near me during the day." "I will not. I will be a mere spectator. The old vault of our ancestors will be opened, I presume, Captain?" "It is opened." "I must see it, and ruminate on what we once were. It is a thing I like doing. The ghosts of our dead, what was that?" "I heard nothing." "I thought I heard a footstep behind us." "They stood still, but the road appeared to be quite deserted, unlikely to continue so for the remainder of that evening. They walked on again, speaking in somewhat lower tones than before. Will the late Sir William's death delay the wedding much? Asked the younger man curiously. Destancy languidly answered that he did not see why it should do so. Some little time would of course intervene, but, since there were several reasons for dispatch, he should urge Miss Power and her relatives to consent to a virtually private wedding which might take place at a very early date, and he thought there would be a general consent on that point. There are indeed reasons for dispatch. Your title, Sir William, is a new safeguard over her heart, certainly, but there is many a slip, and you must not lose her now. I don't mean to lose her. Said Destancy. She is too good to be lost. And yet since she gave her promise I have felt more than once that I would not engage in such a struggle again. It was not a thing of my beginning, though I was easily enough inflamed to follow. But I will not lose her now. For God's sake, keep that secret you have so foolishly pricked on your breast. It fills me with remorse to think what she with her scrupulous notions will feel, should she ever know of you and your history, and your relation to me. Dare made no reply till after a silence, when he said, Of course mum's the word till the wedding is over. And afterwards promise that for her sake? And probably afterwards. Sir William Destancy drew a dejected breath at the tone of the answer. They conversed but a little while longer, the captain hinting to Dare that it was time for them to part. Not, however, before he had uttered a hope that the young man would turn over a new leaf and engage in some regular pursuit. Promising to call upon him at his lodgings, Destancy went indoors, and Dare briskly retraced his steps to Markton. When his footfall had died away, and the door of the house opposite had been closed, another man appeared upon the scene. He came gently out of the hedge opposite Myrtle Villa, which he paused to regard for a moment. But instead of going townward, he turned his back upon the distant sprinkle of lights, and did not check his walk till he reached the lodge of Stancy Castle. Here he pulled the wooden acorn beside the arch, and when the porter appeared his light revealed the pedestrian's countenance to be scathed, as by lightning. I beg your pardon, Mr. Power, said the porter with sudden deference as he opened the wicket. But we wasn't expecting anybody tonight, as there is nobody at home, and the servants on board wages, and that's why I was so long a coming. No matter, said Abner Power. I have returned on sudden business, and have not come to stay longer than tonight. Your mistress is not with me. I meant to sleep in Markton, but have changed my mind. Mr. Power had brought no luggage with him beyond a small handbag, and as soon as a room could be got ready he retired to bed. The next morning he passed in idly walking about the grounds, and observing the progress which had been made in the works now temporarily suspended. But that inspection was less his object in remaining there than meditation, was abundantly evident. When the bell began to toll from the neighboring church, to announce the burial of Sir William Destancy, he passed through the castle, and went on foot in the direction indicated by the sound. Reaching the margin of the churchyard he looked over the wall, his presence being masked by bushes, and a group of idlers from Markton who stood in front. Soon a funeral procession of simple, almost meager and threadbare character arrived, but Power did not join the people who followed the deceased into the church. Destancy was the chief mourner and only relation present, the other followers of the broken-down old man being an ancient lawyer, a couple of faithful servants, and a bout villager who had been page to the late Sir William's father, the single living person left in the parish who remembered the Destancys as people of wealth and influence, and who firmly believed that family would come into its rights ere long, and oust the uncircumcised Philistines who had taken possession of the old lands. The funeral was over, and the rusty carriages had gone, together with many of the spectators. But Power lingered in the churchyard, as if he were looking for someone. At length he entered the church, passing by the cavernous pitfall with descending steps which stood open outside the wall of the distancy aisle. Arrived within, he scanned the few idlers of antiquarian tastes who had remained after the service to inspect the monuments, and beside a recumbent effigy in alabaster whose features Paula had wiped with her handkerchief, when there with Somerset he beheld the man at Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.